listeners. We're joined today by VJ Jones, the winner of the newest OCR in America, Hildevat, Battle on the Beach. VJ, how are we doing?
I'm so good. Just so good.
I think this is the second time we've had VJ on, isn't it? The second official time. He came on with Leon a few weeks back, wasn't it? Before Leon, when Leon was out there in America and unfortunately got his knee injury. But I think
that
this is the second time. I think this is the second time VJ's officially been on. And what a few years since VJ has been on last. What a few years you've had, my friend. Jesus, you're just taking the OCR world by storm. It's like, where do we even start with VJ? Let's be fair, Luke. Like, what do we start with? You know, let's come off the back of this weekend. Let's go Hildevat. Why not? Champion. To be fair, mate, I watched it all right. I streamed in. I did struggle for a few hours with Matt Davis to watch all the streaming. I will put it out there. It was at one point I was like, I was getting dizzy. I had to turn it off because the cameraing was so poor. Anyway, we'll go past that. I never thought it was in doubt. Now I'm a Ryan Atkins lover. I have to say, I do always think Ryan Atkins is going to win everything. I have to say that is my opinion, but it never looked in doubt. Leon, calling you Leon now, VJ, did it? It never looked in doubt. No. Even in that final, like, all the comments going crazy, Atkins going to bring his A game, blah, blah, blah. You were just like, nah, I'm going to go out as hard as I fucking well can. I'm just going to hold on. And, mate, let's be fair. Once you got that gap of 15, 20 meters, there's no way, surely no way he was catching you. What was your game plan going into the final?
Well, I knew I had a couple options. It was like, do I hang with him and try to break him at the end? Like just use pure speed to do it or...
finish him.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of thing. I didn't know what I was going to do. I had a couple conversations. I talked to my coach. I talked to Ryan Kent. We had a conversation before the race. Talked to my dad, just like their opinions on what should happen. Because for some reason, I wasn't very confident. Like, I was confident that I could make the final, but Atkins was such a mystery. Like, I haven't raced him this year. No one's seen what his fitness is like, and he can suddenly come out of nowhere and just be in fantastic shape. So we didn't really know what that was going to be. But then I thought, like, you know, I have big aspirations for the year. What I want to do is I want to really give that 3K at OCR Worlds a go. And I thought that is a balls to the wall effort, all out the whole time. The only way that you're going to be able to compete for the win in that race is to just like be the fastest man on the course and go as hard as you can. So, in the semifinal round, I went out extremely hot. Like I burned down the beach and, I actually paid the price for it going into that final lap. I went a little too fast. Like I was sub 5 minute pace on the way out. On the beach, and it was a little much and started to burn in the later laps. Yeah. So going into the final, I thought I'm going to stick to a pace that I think I can hold the whole time. And whatever that limit is, like however fast I think I can go the whole time, I'll stay there. So a little bit conservative, the first lap, sitting around 5:20 pace. And that stuck pretty consistently for, a lot of the running on that like better sand. So I just went out hard and I wanted to stay consistent, and just control the race, from tape to tape pretty much. I just went out hard and took, big moves on the obstacles and tried to do everything, just really fast and dominate it the whole way.
That's good. Before we crack on and hear a bit more about the game plan and the strategy, let's explain to the listeners what Hildevat is. Jack's kind of jumped ahead about 15 steps.
I got too excited. All right, come on.
So Hildevat, obviously, it's a new race, I believe, in the US. It's on the beach. There is rounds to this race, unlike the general OCRs don't really have stages or rounds. They're normally at one single race. So this one was three rounds, and you had people drop out of the rounds each time. It was 6-4-2, I believe. So you were actually, that last final was a full head-to-head with somebody.
Yeah. Which,
a little different from being in a normal race. We've got quite a few people.
Right.
But yeah, so what was the obstacles like? They had a few rigs, carries, kind of rope climb as well. So the basic kind of general obstacles. What was the technical level of the rigs?
So Just to go back to what Hildervatt is, Hildervatt is a race series that takes place specifically on beaches. Like, they're a Florida-based company. That's what they're looking to do, and they're going to kind of expand around that. They want to race on the coast. So this specific event, the Battle on the Beach, is not like their normal format. They're normally just an elite wave, age group competitive waves and open waves, just like anything else. They set this up as a specific invitational to where they invited six men and six women to this event to compete. It was elimination racing. People thought it was bracket racing at first, where you go head to head with somebody and you eliminate to the final. No. So each one of us had to run every round until you got eliminated. So six of us started, the bottom two finishers got eliminated. Later that day, four of us raced. Third and fourth place got eliminated. And then the next day in the morning, first and second went head to head to see who was the king. And that was it was really interesting because everyone knows, you know, Atkins has such a amazing like endurance background and what he can do, you know. So as more races went on, the longer we got into the weekend, we knew he was just going to remain strong the whole way. So I had to make sure my recovery was just like super dialed. But it turns out the hardest thing was just how rough it was on your hands traversing through the rigs, because there was a lot of rope involved in this, like rings and bars and things like that. You can kind of handle even like nunchucks, but something about ropes can really like wear into your hands. So, that was kind of the rough part of it. But as far as like technicality of obstacles, the two rigs there were only two rigs per lap. But that means we're hitting six rigs. And then we had the one final rig that was a little more difficult, but they were really great. The Kempson Designs rig was really awesome. The way that he designs his obstacles are great to where almost anybody can complete it, but the more skilled athletes can take risks, can make bigger moves, and it pays off really big. So you were seeing a spread in that race of like, you know, Kempson, Atkins and I doing it in, say, you know, 8 seconds, and the slowest guys in the heat doing it more towards that, like, you know, 14-second, 16-second range. So that's a huge gap as far as putting time and skill paying off. So that was really cool. And then the second rig was also really great. It had a cargo net in the middle, similar to like the Underdog obstacle that we had at North American OCR in 2019. And it was another obstacle where like bigger moves really like paid dividends, like jumping into the rig, making the big swings, that sort of thing. So it was a risk and reward type of situation, and skill was definitely rewarded. So they did well with those rigs. It wasn't like your traditional, you know, rings and bars and stuff like that, to where, you know, everyone's going just about the same pace through it, because there's only one real technique to go through it. Right. So it was cool to see like obstacles like that. And I think we need more of that, especially in the US. There's just not enough like innovation as far as like racing here.
It's funny, we were just saying that before you came on, VJ, that watching that made me realize that someone like you, VJ, and I'm sure being good friends with Leon, and he's probably, you know, nagged you in the ear about coming over to Europe and racing in Europe. You know, we have races, you know, toughest Viking race, OCR series, and literally you can't go a meter up the course without having a rig like that. It's like, it's all like that. You know, very what I call flow style obstacles. So like you say, it rewards the people that want to be a little bit more, you know, jumpy. And but you know, your general person, or if you're doing there for, if you know it's a 15-mile race, you're going to be a little bit more, you know, casual about it, and you're not going to try and wear your grip out as much. So I think someone like yourself and Atkins would really love, even like Kempson, you know, he's getting his name for himself being a bit of a rig guy nowadays, you know, with Savage and that, you know. So I think for me and Luke watching that on the Brits, or even the Europeans watching that race, it's more like what we're used to. 100%. I think it's unusual that the Americans find that such a, whoa, it's a really cool rig. And we're seeing that like, well, that's a normal rig for us. It's weird having it the other way around for a change. You know, we normally look at the Americans and go, look at those bastards, they've got everything. And then now it's almost a bit the other way around. It's a bit like, well, actually, we've been racing like that for a while. And it's a shame. It's, and my mum said to me after that race, you could have gone to California. It's in the it's on the green list for you Brits. I was like, you mean I could have gone to Hildevatt? But hey, I would have enjoyed it. It's so it was a mile, wasn't it, VJ? So it's a mile of sand running. What amazed me about the course is that Hildevatt obviously didn't rent any sort of security or safety on the course. So one on the morning when you guys, because it was about 12 o'clock for us, 2 o'clock for us, but the morning for you guys, the second round of the second heat wave, there was people just like picnicking, sunbathing, you know, getting basically on their towels, you know, tanning themselves. Well, you've got like Nicole Miracle and, you know, Becky and VJ and Ryan just making your way around them. How weird was that for you? Like, that must have been so surreal.
It was definitely something. It made it feel like a much more like less of a production, less of something like that you'd see Spartan do, where they'd shut down the whole beach and like nobody's going to be there. But it was interesting. I mean, where the like event and the actual venue was, where all the obstacles were, there was nobody like around in the way there. But we just kind of had these little flags in the ground directing us down the beach towards where we were supposed to go. And there was nothing shutting down that section of the beach. So there's people, you know, sun tanning, there's kids running around building sandcastles and stuff, and you're just mobbing through there as fast as you can. And they have no idea that, you know, like some of the best obstacle racers in the country are there like duking it out. Yeah, so
five minute mile pace.
Yeah, just like they're like, why are these people running so fast down the beach? Like they're
what's
way
he stolen?
they need to chill. But it was interesting. And you found kind of the path, like after your first run, you kind of found like, if I go behind this guy's umbrella, then I have kind of an open path to the bucket carry. And that seems to work really well. So you figure it out.
I bet you've got in your head, I bet you've got someone that you picked out of the crowd. Is there anyone like a red trunk man or maybe a big boob girl? You know, is there anybody particularly you picked out in the crowd that you can remember?
Not really. Like when you're that deep and like, pain, because I've been in Colorado and it's been cold.
Yeah.
Like for the first time in my life, I've experienced cold weather. And now I went to Florida and it was so hot.
Yeah.
Like it was ridiculously hot. And it was honestly a little painful.
You raced with a shirt on, VJ.
Oh, I did that so that I could pour water on it and it would keep me wet
cool.
for longer.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was like my strategy because it was so warm out there. But yeah, when it was that painful, you're just kind of like dazed and just booking it. But there was a couple times where like, you know, a little kid stepped out in front of me or like an old lady would just like walk in front
pretty
of you
slowly. Yeah.
And you're like, hey, look out. Like people are coming through. Like it was, I almost took out a little kid and like, you know, I would have felt really bad, but I wouldn't have stopped.
Yeah, picked him up.
Like I was just been like, I hope a parent saw that.
Just got you would have continued racing. So VJ, you already mentioned about recovery being a key thing between having two races one day and then the final on the last day. Obviously racing on sand as well. Did that give you any issues? Like any more pain in like calves in between the races, or what was the recovery process for you that night?
My legs were surprisingly good. Like a lot of people talked about like the front of their shins and their calves being really messed up from the sand. I felt really good actually. I mean, my butt got pretty sore just from like, I don't know exactly what caused that, but my cheeks were sore. Okay.
hold on. Was that from the racing or was that from the night? Yeah. I'm a bit confused.
That was before the night. Okay.
Before the night. Okay.
In the race.
I would imagine I'd imagine from when you're in the sand, because you're lifting up a lot higher, you're activating your piriformis a lot more. Yeah. You know, so you into your glutes. So surely that the leg lift effectively, I suppose, is what's causing that extra pain there.
And when we got in the loose sand, I found the most efficient way wasn't like a faster stride. It was to like just kind of bound through it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the more you touch the sand, the less ground you're covering.
Yeah.
Like every time you press into the sand, you're losing like 30% of your freaking force into it. So might as well touch it less. So if you watch the live feed, I start kind of like bounding through the sand, just taking these big long loping strides. So I wasn't touching as much. So that could have been part of it. But for me, it was mainly like make sure I was just hydrated as much as I could. I was eating right after the rounds. Like as soon as they finished, I'd go out and like eat like sugary foods just to kind of keep my system fueled as much as I could. And then like lathering with CBD to make sure like nothing got sore and that everything felt good the next day. That was pretty much all I did. I had like rock tape and stuff with me, and I had rock floss and was ready for anything that, if anything popped up, I was ready to take care of it. Fortunately, my body was pretty solid through the weekend. And the only thing was like, I ripped my hand open, during the second race, and I was able to.
Yeah, we saw that on the live feed. You kept looking at your hand, and I was thinking to myself, oh, he's probably ripped a callus there. Is that what actually happened?
Yeah, so actually, it wasn't on a rig. It was on the vertical cargo. When I flipped over, I lost my grip on one hand, and on my index finger, I ripped a big chunk off.
Ooh, okay.
That was really deep, and I was worried about basically blood running down my hand and then it being slippery. Yeah. So what I actually kept in my running belt, like a couple pieces of tape that I pre-cut. And during the run after the bucket, I opened up a piece of tape and wrapped my finger.
You're not just a pretty face, are you, EJ? Come on. You smart. Hold on, hold on.
For the
tire. What else you got in there? Mate, I reckon we should do a game like what's in VJ's bag. That would be epic. Like, I reckon you've got so much in there. You know, just a turkey sandwich, you know.
Hey, it holds a lot. My naked belts work really well. And they can hold a lot of stuff. So my first round, I didn't know what it was going to be like. And I actually asked them, like, what is your feel? Like, they didn't have a rule about chalk or if you could bring like liquid chalk.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I asked and I was like, can we bring liquid chalk? And he's like, that's totally fine. And I'm like, that really surprised me. So I had liquid chalk in my bag the first round. I had extra tape in case my hands ripped. I had a couple things like ready for anything, but I'm definitely glad I have the tape on me, and I had the tape on me in the third round as well, because like if that tape peeled off, I was ready to like rewrap if needed.
But. Tell you what, that's a massive, massive takeaway from me listening to you say that, because I always thought like short course, you know, like I've got one coming up this weekend in England. It's short courses. I mean, it's nowhere near 3 miles. It's only 800 meter rounds, but still, I mean, I could potentially do that 3 or 4 times. It still adds up. So you think, short course, you know, like, I'm only going to be on course, in your case, 20 minutes, 22 minutes or whatever it was, 25, I think, sub 25 every time. You know, that's not enough time. I don't need drink. I don't need this. I need that. But you just point proven that actually, you know, that could be the difference between you getting through a round or not getting through a round or winning and not winning, even in that short space of time, how much planning and prep goes in to. And would you have called last weekend sort of like, not really a race, more of a, I mean, nothing away from Hildevatt, because I don't know them as a race or company, but would you have said it was more fun for you, VJ? You know, you weren't really too bothered. If you'd finished third, would you have cared? Or were you actually using this as a target race?
Well, I was, I definitely wanted to perform really well here.
Sure.
It was a new concept, a new format, and plus it was $5,000 on the line. So
it's true.
I was definitely wanting to get my hands on that. But also with the invitational. Yeah, exactly. Like if you get, you know, you're inviting Ryan Atkins out, who's, you know, international superstar. You got Kempson, who's been really proven here. You got the world champion from Spartan Race. You got the North American OCR champion, the North American Spartan champion. Like it was a decent turnout of people. So I definitely wanted to perform really well at this, especially with a lot of the U.S. National Series getting canceled for the middle of the year and getting pushed and moved around. We didn't really know what was going to happen. So this was a race on my schedule that I wanted to perform really well at. And I was just really excited to see. There was supposed to be more obstacles than there were. So I was ready for a lot more. There was supposed to be 3 rigs. There's supposed to be a warp wall. There's supposed to be all this other stuff, but they got restricted to build some of the things because apparently it's like sea turtle season in Florida. So they couldn't build certain obstacles that were a certain size because they didn't want sea turtles like laying their eggs underneath it. So it was really, really weird. I don't know. Like who knew, right? Like you can't build your obstacles because of sea turtles. So
you won't get that in England. Yeah.
Definitely won't get that. But that was, I was prepared for more, but there was a little bit less there. But yeah, I came into this race like looking to win and, you know, it actually ended up being kind of a statement race. Like, that I'm like, my fitness was a little better than I expected. Like going into that last round, I did really well and I'm excited for what comes later in the year.
I'm interested about the rounds. Did they change anything of the course per round, or was it exactly the same course each round?
It was the same every round. Yeah, so, they were talking about maybe changing a couple of things, but they didn't know if they would have time or if they could do it well, or didn't want to experiment with anything like before having it like rock solid like beforehand. Yeah. So,
I mean, to be fair, there was one cock up on the girl side, wasn't there? Because I know that Nicole and Rebecca missed the hoist first round, first lap of first round. And yep. Rather than, because I said to my wife, I was watching at the time, this is going to be interesting because they can't now exactly punish those two after that round, because that would be, I mean, what they should have done, but it would have been harsh on Nicole and Becky if someone had said from the crowd, oh, you're not doing the hoist, it's been out, or whatever was said. So in quick thinking, I think the director basically said, I'll tell you what, we'll let on the second round, a second lap, we'll let the girls that did do it pass it, so everyone's then equal. So
yep.
it was interesting to see a company on the fly make a quick decision and say, you know what, this race could be ruined if we don't sort this out quickly now. And they did sort it out, and to fair to them, they did quite a good job of coming up that decision, and it worked quite well. Nothing came of it. So it does show you that, you know, those guys are still learning, and I think making big changes and moving rigs around and changing things can cause more issues if you do that, you know. And as a racer,
yeah, for sure.
And you, like you were saying, you went out first lap, you went out a bit too hot, you realized that, you backed off, you know, go into the second round. Did you then feel like you said, you had lines, you knew where to run, you knew what person to avoid and what umbrella to miss? And I'm a bit disappointed they didn't put you in the water with a bucket. I think they should have put you in the water. That would have been hilarious. Or was there an insurance?
That's what we were supposed to have. We were supposed to go out into the water. We don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They told us, like, you're going to go out, you're going to get into the water with the bucket, and you're going to run back. So we were like, that's actually a pretty long bucket carry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they didn't put us all the way out. We don't know what happened there. We were kind of bummed about it too, that it was so short, especially since the buckets were so light. Like, if you watch us, like, we just picked them up and like flipped them onto our shoulders. It didn't weigh anything.
Yeah, that's very American though. That's very American. We don't get that in Europe. No.
Heavy as hell.
But that would have been a game changer, because, like, from your point of view, VJ, and not saying that you're not a carry, because I don't personally know what you like at carrying, but I would say, okay, Atkins, for instance, in that final, coming to the final, like, you'd want to be a few minutes ahead of, a few seconds ahead of Atkins going into that bucket carry, because we all know that Atkins can pick up a buddy bucket and carry it like an absolute monster, you know, which he did in the second heat to get into second place. You know, he overtook Kempson by, you know, that on the bucket. We didn't see that on the live feed. It was Kempson went into the bucket and came out somehow third. We don't quite know, but we just assumed that Atkins turned on his Atkins power.
Yeah,
I just like to point out that I had the fastest bucket carry in Jacksonville.
Did you? Okay.
So,
in that case, I take it back. I take it back.
Now, what Kempson knew what he had to do to beat Atkins, and he had to go out hot, and so he tried to go with me. And I think it was just a little bit too much for him at the time, to try to go out that hot. And I think he ran the race that needed to be run to beat him, but he wasn't ready for it yet. So he kind of fell apart after that. But I was excited to the idea of going against him in the final.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting.
Kind of similar skill sets and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, he knew what he needed to do, and he went for it, and I applaud him. But then he just wasn't ready for it.
That's the issue with, I suppose, with that short course style racing, that if you do go out too hard, you haven't then got enough of a running section or enough of a rest to get your heart rate back down and get back relaxed. It literally is all or nothing, isn't it? It's like you've got to, in each obstacle, in,
top,
out, in, out, yeah, boom. Do you know what I mean?
No, yeah.
And the problem is the obstacles weren't long enough or difficult enough. Like, no offense, but you, Atkins, weren't going to fail. Kempson wasn't going to fail, you know. You know, maybe make a mistake, miss a handle, but in general, it would have taken a lot for someone like yourself to mess up, you know. So there is that always in the head, and that's when it becomes, and this is what interests me about short course racing, it becomes so much more of a mental race, you know. Not always in this case, the fastest guy did obviously win, but in general, it's not always the fastest guys win. You know, if you'd felt the pressure, VJ, and got to that last rig and slipped off and Atkins come by you, you would have been super bummed, because actually I know I'm quicker than you at this, but you know, unfortunately it didn't happen. But it's such a more of a mental game, isn't it, for OCR short course racing?
Yeah. And it's, you got to play to your strengths. Like, faster people know that they can afford to run faster in between the obstacles, but sometimes they can overdo it to where they're going to fail obstacles. When stronger people can just go as fast as they possibly can the whole time, knowing that they're not going to fail any obstacles and they're just going to be rock solid. So for someone like me, I'm kind of in between. I'm pretty solid on obstacles and I'm pretty strong in the run. So, and I do a lot of training like that, like having an obstacle course in my backyard, I'm able to specifically go out and simulate like what race pace is going to feel like and what it's going to feel like hopping onto obstacles, running out of there. So, that's kind of a strength of mine now, like having the advantage of being able to train here.
Mm. Talking of training center, I was going to say,
just hear about the forest. What's it like building your own OCR place in your back garden? What's the course look like? We've seen Leon running around there on his Instagram and you as well, doing a lot of rigs and different bits. What's the most challenging kind of obstacle you've got out there then?
Most challenging
altitude.
Other than altitude, yeah. So first thing I did when we got out here is I plotted a 400 meter section of trail, a loop, right? It's kind of like a horseshoe. It goes out, comes around, does that. It's very cool. So I wanted something that I could do intervals on in like a measured format. So I basically went with like make a track. I'm going to make a trail track in the backyard, rented a tractor, did all that stuff. I started building obstacles around it. Started with the Z wall, because that's something that somehow I struggled with at one point mentally, had some mess ups there, but now I'm perfect on it. So I built that, built some walls. I had a rig that I had built, a 22 foot long rig that I had built back in California, and I brought it with me, rebuilt it here, put that together. And that's awesome. So I can like do monkey bars and all kinds of different grips. I have Gibbons on there almost all the time. And then I just went through and built some more things. I built a hoist, built a spear throw, rope climb. Probably the most difficult thing for a lot of people is the low rig, because we don't really have those in the US, at least in the mainstream series. So I built a duel between a Savage Race obstacle and a low rig. And that's usually pretty challenging for people that come out and they've never dealt with anything like that. They're like, can I use my feet? And I'm like, yeah, that's the whole point. They're like, low rig. So try it out. But yeah, that's probably the most challenging thing that we have here. But yeah, it's really cool. And I just finished building cutting a sandbag carry, which is about 150 meters long or so. Really, really cool. Training ground.
How do you find that it's changed your racing? Because obviously, VJ, let's go back a year before this all happened. Because when did you move to Colorado? When did all this happen? This change?
August.
So pre-August. Let's be fair. You were still a very tidy OCR racer athlete. You know. But I would say since then, actually, you've actually come on leaps and bounds, if not more. Do you put that down to the sort of what you would call? And I'm in the same situation, actually, VJ, with my place. You know, like, you can get very specific with races. You know, do you feel that's a massive plus for you?
I feel like it's going to be eventually. I wouldn't say that I've progressed leaps and bounds since August. I say that I've actually taken a small step back since the beginning of 2020. Like, going into 2020, I was dangerous. Like, it was going to be a really good year. Like, I was probably running faster than I ever had. I was in really good shape, and now I'm not really there, because a lot of people can stay focused training the whole, the whole 2020 off season with no races, nothing going on. Something to train towards. A lot of people can. Really impressed with those people. Not me. Yeah, I'm the same way. So I didn't have anything on the schedule. I'd train for like a month, like, oh yeah, we got something coming up, and then it would get canceled, fall apart. So I kind of lost a little bit of that edge, that top end. I'd say I'm still like 90 to 95%, but I'm not that same speed that I was. So I'm building up back towards that, but being able to specifically say for Hildervat, go to back-to-back obstacle training was really, really good for me. Like, previously I'd still go to the track and do different exercises and things like that in between runs, but it wasn't the same as doing like skill-based work as well on obstacles while you're doing intervals. So I felt a lot more confident just in my abilities and what we were getting into, going into like the rigs and everything at like a high heart rate, because I've done it so much already. So it's definitely going to be an advantage, especially going into OCR worlds, being able to do those things specifically. Like, I can do a 3K time trial basically in my backyard, see where I'm at, what I need to work on. And I can do that a couple of times going into the event, which a lot of people wouldn't necessarily be able to do.
Mm.
No. No, that's good then. So would you say the 3K OCR Worlds is kind of like your big A race for this year?
Absolutely.
Is that
the one? Like everything else is just kind of on the way to that race. Like I'm not going to, I won't be hopping in any like long mountainous races because it's just not worth the time to like deviate from the plan. So yeah, 3K all the way.
So here's a question then for you, BJ. Obviously that means you have to beat one John Album to get to your prize this year. One, is it possible? Of course you're going to say yes. And two, how is it possible? How does VJ Jones take down the mighty John Albon at an OCR Worlds? Because he is beatable, let's be fair, but at the minute he is unbeatable at that particular distance, at that particular race. How do we do it, VJ? What's your game plan? And don't give it away if you don't want to, obviously, but no, he doesn't listen, don't worry.
No, you have to outrun him.
Right.
Yep.
And you have to be really skilled on obstacles. So all the people that are good enough on obstacles to out obstacle him don't have the running legs to beat him.
Okay.
And the people that have the running legs seem to struggle with obstacles and being smooth with it. Like someone like Mark Batres, he's got the wheels to keep up with Albon. Yeah. But when he gets on obstacles, he's not as smooth. He's not as efficient. Mm. So it ends up taking more out of him. So having that balance is really good. And I feel like I have a similar balance there. And I mean, I have to believe that if I believe that, you know, I can win this race. And I feel like, you know, no one's even challenged him. Looking at like previous results and things like that, like I think Atkins has finished second in that race like almost every year, right? Yep. And he's beaten him by like 45 seconds to a minute, like almost every time.
Yep.
So then when I look back towards my NORAM experience, I had a good 30 seconds, 20 to 30 seconds on Atkins at that race. Then we look at this previous weekend, I did that again.
Yeah.
So I feel like based on my performances, you know, gauged against Atkins and performances on similar courses to OCR Worlds, there's potential there. That gives me reason to believe that I could have a shot. So I'm going to be in much better shape by the time I get there. I want to be as sharp as I can be. And, you know, I'd love an opportunity to race him. The only time we've ever faced each other in a race is at, you know, Tahoe. Spartan World Championships. Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, that's not my speed. I'm not like some long mountainous racer, at least not yet. So 3K, I feel like I can give him a run. And I'm going to run, like when I get there, I'm going to run the winning race until I don't.
Yep.
I'm going to run at the front until
you're not,
I can't. So if it lasts the whole time, then it lasts the whole time and I win. If I, you know, blow up, you know, 200 meters from the finish and that's it, then that's it. But I'm gunning for it. That's everything I want from this season.
For the UK and European listeners listening that haven't been to Stratton, what's the 3K like? What's the course going to be like there, having done it in the past, VJ? Not OCR Worlds, but having been to that particular venue in the past, what would you expect to see from a 3K? Hills, no
flat,
hills?
Or is it going to be flat? Pretty rolling. You'll have a little climb at the beginning. Like they'll probably send you up the hill for a minute, come back down. You're going to have a sandbag carry that's going to go up the mountain as well.
Yep.
And then it's pretty rolling. Like you'll have some little climbs as you go through, but it's mainly towards the bottom of the mountain. And half of the race, or the last like quarter of the race, is through the village. So you're going to be running on asphalt pretty much, and like cobblestone type of.
It's going to be close,
stuff.
Isn't it? It's going to be close.
Speed.
It's going to be an exciting race, and I'm really excited to. It'll be my first year going to OCR Worlds.
Yep.
Like doing any of that event, so I'm really excited for it.
Do you think there's anybody else that you can think of other than you and John that would be in that? I mean, Kempson, would he be another shout if he could get himself run ready? Or
I feel like he's going to be more into the 15K if he goes. He likes to do the longer stuff. It's much more enjoyable for him. He's gifted in the shorter races, but he doesn't enjoy it as much, and he's very driven on what he likes to do.
So
I feel like he'll be much more into the 15K.
Atkins, Aaron?
Not Aaron. No, that guy's no. Atkins, he's always dangerous, so you can't ever count him out. And I'm sure there's a couple other European racers that I'm not as familiar with that can definitely throw in. I've heard about
Leon. Leon, why would I think about Leon here? Whether he'd be fit enough, I don't know, but.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Can he get in shape? And are there going to be enough obstacles? Because like at the previous the North American OCR championships, there were like more obstacles than a normal like US race, but there wasn't a ton. It wasn't like we were just like slamming into obstacle over and over again.
Yeah.
There were like these gauntlets. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see where he can stack up. But if it comes to like a running race similar to what it was his previous year, I don't think he has enough time to really
build up,
make up all that time on the obstacles, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure.
So with the 3K being the goal, then what is the race schedule looking like going up to this race? Have you got some other races lined up that you're going to definitely go to? Is it a Savage Blitz? Are you going to be looking to do the Spartan Cross events, these new short course ones that they're looking at doing, or is it Spartan Sprints or more Hildevatn?
Surely the Spartan Cross, you should just call that VJ Sport now. That's VJ's. That's just his. He'll be the world champion of that in a few years.
Well, they've canceled all the Spartan Cross for this year, so they're not going to continue it until 2022. So awesome with that. But right now I'm leading the US National Series, so I'm going to pursue that. There's the next race in the series is a mountainous beast in Utah, which I will not do. then I'm going to, they're having a 10K, a super in, what's my schedule? Say Asheville at the end of July. So I'll be hopping in that. I do actually have one beast on the schedule, which is West Virginia. It's in August, but fortunately it's a less than 2 hour beast. My time limit is kind of like that 90 minute range. So the closer it is to 90 minutes, just basically less than 2 hours, the more competitive I can be. And I'm not going to really change my training going into OCR Worlds or like for my training for OCR Worlds. I'm not going to change that very much. It's going to stay the same. And I'm just going to go out to West Virginia because I know that I can run well there. And I'll hopefully be stacking enough volume going into that to where I can be competitive, but still focused on like OCR World specific training.
Okay, that's good. So solid schedule heading up into the big A race. Back to Hildevatn quickly. Obviously, there was coverage. Jack spoke about that he's watched the coverage of it. Did you enjoy that there was a lot more coverage of this race? Obviously, we've seen Spartan have a bit of their own coverage. Savage Race has had coverage this year. Hildevatn's just had coverage. Do you think OCR is going to really gain from having this coverage, being online, more faces seeing it? Obviously, these kind of style invitational events.
Not in the style that it is currently. I mean, if you look at like the main media outlet of OCR is Obstacle Racing Media, and they can't even afford a gimbal to make sure that their footage is stable.
I didn't say that.
Right. So in the current fashion, it's great that people can follow along with the races. As far as promoting the sport and getting new faces wanting to watch it, they wouldn't last 5 minutes on that broadcast. It was
we've got a gimbal.
Yeah, we've got gimbals. Yeah, we do it properly.
Yeah, honestly, if they would have had just gimbals for their cameras, it probably would have changed, you know, the entire broadcast and the way it would have looked.
AJ, if you want to see a real athlete race this weekend on Saturday, moi is going to take on a short course racing. I will make sure I've got a gimbal. You watch it. You join on Multisport Media and watch the best coverage you've ever seen of some true British, hopefully sun, hopefully, because it's just been shit for the last 5 weeks. Hopefully
don't
sun.
Yeah, you don't know about the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that is true. It's probably going to be dope.
We'll see. So there was a OCR report also did a live feed.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Which was actually a lot better. But the thing is, they didn't have someone that could run back and forth with the athletes. So you missed out on half the race, basically.
Yeah.
But I think their coverage was actually a lot better, but a lot of people didn't know it was happening.
Yeah. What needs to happen? what needs to happen? Like in Europe and England, we have like Red Bull take over. So they don't do it to make money per se. They do it because they just want to make amazing videos, right? And you'll obviously a little bit know about, you'll know a little bit about Red Bull because obviously Leon's attached with Red Bull and Ida and people like that. So when they do that sort of thing, they just put everything into it and they put it on their, you know, their media outlet, whether that be like Red Bull TV or on Instagram or Facebook. That's
the
what
Conquer
it
the Castle stuff is.
Conquer
under
the Castle, yeah. It just needs a company to go, do you know what? We've got four rabbits. Let's say, for instance, VJ's not racing Hildevat last weekend. Right, VJ, we'll give you, you know, $100, couple hundred dollars to run up and down with a gimbal, you know. I don't know what their going rate is, but I
pay for his hotel or his food.
Well, all right, but yeah, all that as well on top of that. But what I'm saying is they pay proper rabbits to actually get some quality content, because if we do ever want to be an Olympic sport, right, and I do think we'll get it, and I think it's got to be done right. And like, let's be fair, if we do get the Olympics, it will be this short course ninja style, fast, very watchable type of sport. It's not going to be a 15 mile beast up some mountain, is it? You know, let's be fair. So
absolutely,
you know, the more we can get on it now and actually get these companies out there doing it, you know,
just need it to be watchable.
Look at podcasting. You know, podcasting 5 years ago, even in the OCR world, Matt B. Davis was the only one, really. I mean, there was a few others, but Matt B. Davis was the one. Now there's hundreds of podcasts about OCR out there, you know. So it can grow. It will grow. And it just needs one person, probably not Matt, it needs one person to actually take it and run with it as a proper outlet and go round all these races. Because let's be fair, they are fun to watch. Even from your neutrals, it's good fun to watch. And there's must be so many juniors out there. Like, I mean, I coach a couple and they don't know what's going on in the world of OCR in America because they can't watch it anywhere. How cool would it be if they could watch VJ and Ryan go head to head? They'd love it, but it is just not available. And it needs to be, surely, for this sport to grow and get better and have more VJs come. I mean, how did you get into the sport of VJ? How did you get into the sport of OCR, VJ?
Discovered a local mud run that my dad suggested, and I did really terrible, so I wanted redemption. So I went back and did another one.
Okay.
And then I won that, and I started winning all the SoCal races. Then I wanted to get competitive. Found out about Spartan Race and went and got my ass kicked. So and then I trained specifically for Spartan Race, came back the next year, and I won.
Do you think we just
kept going.
Do you think if it had been more available in Instagram and Facebook and things like that, I know you probably didn't have them 10 years ago, but if it had been there, do you think you would have got into the sport a lot quicker?
No, not necessarily. I think I got into the sport as soon as I would. The thing is, the athletes that are going to be successful in this sport are endurance athletes, ultimately, because then they just developed enough strength to be competitive in this sport. Mm-hmm. But if you like, you're strong, but you don't have any running ability, it's going to be hard to develop. So if we look at
even in the short
those
course
athletes,
even in like a super short course, so we're talking like 400 meter track athletes. So like that, what we see at the minute happening, like,
well, that's a different kind of racing, something I've never experienced. I've never seen or experienced any racing like that. I mean, I've seen like what Leon posted, it was like Barbarian Race or something like that.
Yeah, sure. We're just talking about
something
that.
Like that. Yeah. So I don't, I honestly know nothing about that style of racing. It is non-existent here in the US. We don't have anything of the sort. I'm very interested to see what becomes of that. But from of a racing standpoint in the US, you know, cross-country athletes, mountain bike athletes, those kind of people are the ones that are going to have to come into the sport to be successful.
Yeah.
And those kind of athletes are very closed off to doing other things, especially successful ones. Someone like me, my dad wanted me to do OCR for about a year before I actually did it. And I wouldn't do it because that was outside of my focus. I'm like, no, I'm a cross country athlete. I don't want to run. I don't want to get hurt. I'm going to focus on what I'm doing. And then eventually I did it anyway, but like, I'm very different from a lot of people. A lot of kids are very focused on their sport and the coaches don't like when they do anything alternative either.
Yeah.
Like they'll get upset with you because you went and rode mountain bikes with your friends and they're like, dude, what if you got hurt? What would that mean for the team? And then you get all shamed in front of the team for going and hanging out with your friends.
That's very American, isn't it? I feel like we don't have that in England. It's like, you know, we don't have the choice. We don't have coaches per se, but I suppose if we were a part of a team, if I was doing mountain biking on the side, then that's great because I'm working on my fitness and I'm working on my endurance. It's not going to be like, man, don't get injured. You know, that's a very, I feel like that's where you're from more than the actual for the sport itself, you know?
Yeah. For OCR in the US, that's kind of the story. And there's a lot of kids that have maybe like done it as like kids race, and then they were really good athletes and had the potential to come into OCR and be more competitive, and then they get into track and field in high school and they kind of drift away from OCR because track and field is like the more serious important focus.
And I suppose it, and from a point of view of sponsors and branding and money, it's more that's where you're going to make your money, isn't it, you know, in your track athletes and your cross country. And if you're going to be a good runner,
yeah, if you're top five in the nation and you're making money. If you're not, then you're just poor as the rest of us. But going back to what the sport needs as far as broadcasting and what the sport needs as far as progression, I totally agree. It has to be the short course. The short course is the only way that's going to be exciting, but it also has to be watchable. Mm. And it can't be on the side of a mountain, because you're not going to be able to see the whole thing. You're going to have these shaky cameras running around. It's not going to be a professional broadcast. No matter how much budget you have, you're still going to be running around with people holding GoPros trying to film the course, you know, while trying to keep up with top athletes. So it's not going to work. It needs to be a closed course format, maybe multi-lap, in an area that people can stand and watch the entire race. And you can also have camera work the same way.
Yeah.
Something similar to the Hyrox, the Decafits, but something that's an OCR specific format of that same thing. That is what is going to progress the sport for sure. Like if you want to still have an endurance aspect in OCR in its next like state, that's what it has to be. And I think that that's going to happen pretty soon.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much what you've explained there is pretty much Barbarian Race, VJ, you know, literally around a 400 meter track. If you can imagine Hildervat, put that around a 400 meter track, you've got Barbarian Race basically, you know.
Very cool.
It's that fast and that technical, and if not more technical.
How much running is there involved in that? Is it just the 400 meter, just one time?
Luke's
just
done it.
Yeah. Literally ran just off the track. You started with a bag on your back, you ran with the bag to the track, put it down, first rig, probably 50 meters, second rig, 50 meters, second. Then it was bang, 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 and you finished on the curve on the end of the track. So, 400 meters, one lap round. I think there's eight obstacles, something like that, about eight obstacles, and they're all pretty technical. So,
I'd like to see something that was more towards like a mile.
Yeah.
Still going to have time under tension, like something like that. You're basically just sprinting to the next rig and jumping into it. And you're sprinting into the next rig and jumping into it.
Yeah.
I like to see something that, you know, endurance still plays a part where running is still involved in the sport. Cause that's pure obstacles. Like the fastest guy and the slowest guy aren't going to be very different on the run to the next obstacle, right? You're basically trying to recover to get to the next thing. But I'd like to see something that was more towards that mile length. I feel like
if you take Hildervat, what you were doing it in like 20 to 25 minutes, people were completing that course from the guy's side, let's say. That's a kind of watchable length of time. People will quite happily watch something that is like intense racing for about 20, 25 minutes, especially if you're trying to draw people in, have numbers to watch that. So a mile probably with the technical obstacles would be an ideal one to have as more of a visual aspect to people. And that's when you're going to get more eyes on the sport. You're going to get more sponsors willing to back the sport because they can see that people are interested in watching it. People are interested in taking part. Being involved in the sport. But no, it's great to see you have such great success at Hildervat, obviously in this new style of 1 mile racing. Will you do another one? Will you do a normal Hildervat, or will you do another invitational if they did one? If they invited you back?
Yeah, if they wanted a, you know, battle on the beach too, I'll definitely go back out for that, because I feel like, you know, after their first round here, they've worked out the kinks. I think the next round's going to be really, really cool. I'm excited to see what they put together for that. But yeah, I'd definitely go back. I think it's a very entertaining thing, and OCR needs a spectator sport. You know, it, like if you don't create the people that want to watch it, then it's just going to continue to be this obscure thing.
Was there spectators at the event? Was there
surprisingly watching? Yeah, the first day there was a lot of people like lining the obstacles in the course, and nice. A decent amount of people there. I mean, it wasn't comfortable because it was hot and out in the sun and people were getting sunburned like crazy, but
yeah.
It was still like a cool format to where everyone could watch the most exciting things and not really have to move very far. Mm-hmm. Like they could follow it versus yeah. something like, you know, Spartan Race, you're like booking it a quarter mile, hoping that you're going to catch the next obstacle and see the people. Well, so
it's yeah. an accessible location as well, the beach, whereas some Spartan races, some other races are in fields or up half a mountain somewhere where people, you're going to have trouble getting a car there, let alone finding your way through the forest. At least, I guess, Hildevatt is on a beach. People are quite comfortable with getting to a beach. They can find their way around, you'd hope. So, yeah, that's good.
Plus, there's always that pre and post as well, isn't there? Like, after the race, you've got to chill on the beach. You get to, you know, like, drink a beer if that's what you do, and chill with your girlfriend, your wife, or what have you. And pre-race, you can catch a bit of a tan, chill and enjoy. You know, that's always quite nice to do as well, isn't it? Because, we go for the racing, but I'm sure, Vijay, you're making that trip over to California. It's a bit like, well, actually, while I'm there, you know, sorry, Florida.
Yeah, you've got a bit of a tan.
Yeah, while I'm there, I'll sit and chill. I mean, it's like Kempston's obviously out there kiteboarding at the minute, you know, and I noticed a few other people took advantage, like the Atkins. They obviously drove over and biked a little bit. So it's more of a mini holiday as well, isn't it? A mini getaway. And with it being a beach, that's a little bit more appealing, I suppose.
Destination location.
100%. Definitely was a destination race. They were talking about that during the weekend. Yeah.
Lovely. Wow. Great work on winning, VJ. Where can the listeners keep up with this amazing journey you're on to what would be maybe 3K domination or short course domination? Where can they follow you? Is it Instagram?
He's Facebook? Never going to beat John. Never going to beat John.
Yeah. Is it MySpace? Where are we finding you, VJ?
MySpace was before my time. Never had one of those.
MySpace? He's only 12.
Yeah.
MySpace.
Sorry, Bebo. Yeah, Instagram's good. Just type my name in the search bar and you'll find me, VJ Jones, on Instagram. Pretty easy to follow. I'm hoping to get back on YouTube soon. I was making some videos back in early 2020 and I kind of fell off there. So hopefully I'll get back there and make some more exciting stuff.
Well, you've got $5,000 now. You can buy a gimbal.
That's it.
That's right. Yeah. Get a gimbal. That's what's up. That's really what levels you up. As long as you have the gimbal, then you can't fail.
It's all about the drones now, mate. It's all about the drones. You only get a drone that follows you.
So I ran behind Leon and filmed like a little reel for him, like holding his phone, and people were commenting like, what drone were you using? That footage was like so great. And I'm like, dude, that was just my arm. I don't think I even need the gimbal, dude.
BJ's got three axis arms. I love it. It moves all different directions.
There we go.
That's really wrong to do. Well, I just want to quit before he goes. Are you now coaching, VJ? Is that a thing you do personally now? Are you a coach? Are you taking on athletes?
To an extent. I don't want to put a lot of time into it. VJ the athlete comes first.
Yep.
VJ the coach, as soon as that becomes, you know, the primary thing, then VJ the athlete falls off. So I'm actually working with Richard Diaz on a program that we've put together.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually wearing my sweatshirt right now.
Okay, that's what made me ask.
The OCR Performance Project.
Mm-hmm.
We do a group training and we offer different scales of programming for people, but basically specific to OCR and specific to some events. For a lot of the athletes that are in the US, we'll kind of build up to certain events that a lot of people are going to.
Yep.
But in general, it's really good training just across the board. I handle a lot of the OCR specific stuff, the strength training, the skill work, that sort of thing, some of the intervals. And Rich does a lot of the run specific work. So the development there, the skill work there, the long runs, that sort of thing. And putting our heads together, we've put a really good program together and we've had some good success with some athletes. So it's been awesome and it's been a really good experience and I'll keep going with it. But I don't do like much one-on-one coaching with people. As far as like full programming and everything, because I don't think the best athletes are necessarily the best coaches.
No.
So I want to make sure that, I'm still keeping myself like at the forefront of what I'm doing and not having it spill over into other athletes and that sort of thing.
No, for sure. I thought I'd mention it because I didn't know if you were, you know, because there's a good chance we get a lot of questions like, oh, is VJ coaching, blah, blah, blah. So I just thought I'd ask anyway. And another question, just to finish off this podcast, sorry. What shoes did you wear at the weekend on the beach?
I wore the Salming Elements 3.
Element 3s, okay. I couldn't see on the thing.
Yeah, I was rocking those. They're like paddle tires on the bottom, so they work pretty well in the sand.
Yeah.
Shoe choice wasn't super key there because sand just sucks no matter what you're wearing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was rocking with those, and they worked really well.
I did wonder if anybody was going to choose to go barefoot.
I thought about that, but you have to like traverse some rope with your feet and stuff like that. But also on the beach, like there's some like rocks and shells that were there. So like one misplaced step was going to end your weekend, really mess you up. So, shoes were the move. And especially since we weren't going in the water, like there was no point not to wear shoes.
Very true.
Perfect.
Well, lovely. Wow.
But on the coaching thing,
I'm
not doing like programming for people, but I am starting to do like, some OCR specific work in the backyard here. Mm-hmm. And we just finished building a full gym.
I see this. You've got your own.
Yeah.
I mean, have you won the lottery, sir, KJ? Where's all this come from? It's like, oh, VJ's now got a whole backyard forest. Now he's got a massive treble. By the way, sexy as fuck. By the way, it looks amazing.
Thank you.
It looks.
That treadmill is awesome. And I got it specifically so I could start doing gait work with people.
Sure.
I wanted to like share some of the knowledge that I've gained, you know, working with Rich and research I've done on my own and things like that. And I feel like some people in OCR take it seriously, but some people have really skipped over how much of a key role that running mechanics can play as far as your speed, your longevity in the sport and everything like that. So I just wanted to start doing that with people. So I'm doing some of that. I'm doing some like one-on-one sessions with people here just because it's really convenient for me and I can still get my own training in. So that's kind of the primary thing I'm doing besides you know, racing.
And how do people contact you? Just via Instagram about that?
Black Forest OCR on Instagram or blackforestperformancetraining.com. You can find the website, get all the info you need, see what's going on there.
We will tag that in the show notes so you don't have to type that in, guys, on Google.
And what we really want to know is, when is the Black Forest time trial? When is that happening? The first head-to-head short course race?
I'm thinking that... I'm going to do one in June.
Sweet.
Once I have, like, I'm honestly a couple days away from being fully set on the obstacle
course.
That's
a little bit too early for me and Luke to get a plane ticket. How about next year?
Next year, I'll try to get some sponsors, some backers, and we'll do an invitational style, like Bildervat. We'll get some of the best athletes in Europe. We'll get Thomas Van Tonder out here from South Africa. We'll put something together and make it a big thing.
Yeah, nice. Do it.
Nice. Love it.
There you go.
VJ Jones. Appreciate.
Brilliant. Cheers, PJ.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much, my friends. Well done this weekend, and good luck for the future of Spartan Racing when it does finally happen, and all things OCR, obviously. But you're not going to beat John, let's be fair.
Well, not with that attitude.